Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today in the Clark Ford Studios, one Jeffrey Wright. He's been in Oxford. We're taping this on a Sunday afternoon. We're watching the PGA Tour, so if you hear, Rory's off the course, so you won't hear the Rory stuff. Rory's done for the day. But if you hear Jeffrey get super excited, it's Tiger Woods as we start this three back with, what, about nine holes to play, roughly?
I think he's on five or six now.
Okay, so a little more than that.
13. The problem is Brooks Koepka still has about 17 or 18 holes too.
Okay,
that appears to be the problem.
That's on. So we'll be keeping up with that a little bit as we go, which is really weird for a podcast because it will be over by the time you hear it. But anyway, that's what's going on. He's in town for a golf tournament. He and one Chase Parham teamed up in a golf tournament, finished second. Is that right?
Of course, in the fifth flight, we did some strategic positioning yesterday, shot a really good 84, and then we came back today and we shot 71 and finished second in the Calcutta, huge there, and got some big-time pro shop credit.
That's good.
Yeah, big-time pro shop credit. Yeah.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Before
what
we
you dream about when you're a kid.
It is. It is pro shop credit. Yeah. There's no question. Mm-hmm. I dream about it now. And
100%.
And I've only played
That's what you're playing for.
I played one round of golf in 20 years, mm-hmm. And I dream about pro shop credit. We'll tell you about the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Right next to the Oxford Exxon, so you can fill up at the Oxford Exxon and then fill up at the Oxford Crystal. They've got, depending on how hungry you are, they've got the square meals, a $2 square meal, $3, $4. All of that is there. They've got the party packs. If you're a little hungrier than the $4 square meal, maybe you want 24 crystals, or maybe you're having a party tonight. Maybe you're watching Cubs Nationals, which would be a weird party to have, but hey. Whatever. 24 crystals. It's a party pack there at Crystal. And then it's hotter than you know what outside right now. You can grab a lemonade slushy. It's spiked with the original lemon head lemon candy. It's really, really good if you like citrus stuff. And we've been telling you about this for a while, the pimento cheese crystal meal. It's not that mayonnaise-y pimento cheese. It's just cheesy goodness on your crystal. It's fantastic while supplies last. $3.99. You get three sandwiches, fries, and a drink there at Crystal. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. As I mentioned, Clark Ford's in Amory. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call the number. Ask for my friend Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for, and he'll hook you up with the quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggle, no hassling, all that stuff. He's going to give you a quote, and you can shop that quote around. You'll end up coming back to Corey and the people there at Clark Ford. Great service after the sale, great Ford products, great everything, great delivery options, everything you could possibly want from a car dealer. Corey will be that and more. 662-257-1900. Make sure you tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the Beer Garden podcast, and you'll get an additional $500 off. I'll go ahead and tell you about this one. You guys had LBs last night. Is that right?
We did. So we got three bone-ins, and they did not suck.
No, they never did.
They did not
That's
suck.
That's fair.
Both Chase and our buddy O'Keefe, I think we were all kind of licking the plate. It was just – it's unbelievable. I mean, you and I have talked about this. Like, when I tell people about LBs, it's not blowing steam up anyone. Like, I actually go there. And, like – even if I come back to Oxford for just 48 hours, I'm going to LB's.
Yeah, they've got the bone-in ribeyes like you talk about. It's at 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, right across from Kroger in that little shopping center up there kind of on the hill. They've got everything you could want, all of the fresh cuts. Maybe a bone-in ribeye is not what you're looking for whatever reason. Maybe you're just kind of having a communist moment. That's okay. You can get strips, 12 to 14 ounces. They're great. Filet mignon for the people who if that's your favorite cut, hey man, it's that's okay. It's your world. You can get those. He'll cut those to your specifications. You can get them wrapped in bacon if you'd like. He'll ground up some prime ground beef if you want to have the best burger you've had. Brisket, other fresh cuts. They've got poultry, the fresh free range Joyce Farm chicken breast from Joyce Farms. They've got the pork from Home Place Pastures in Como, seafood from the Gulf, everything you could want, all the sausages. If you want to feel really gluttonous before you have your bone-in ribeye, get some sausages and throw those on the grill. They're fantastic. You can get a ribeye sausage, which is most people's favorite, the spicy bacon, the Swayze sausage, beer, bacon, and cheese, the black and blue, which is beef, bacon, and blue cheese. I love the chicken sausages personally. They're my favorites. But you can go in and try a assortment of your own and see what you like. They also have smoked sausage, summer sausage, and more. They're at LB's. Get in touch with Greg, 662-259-2999.
Well, and you mentioned it. That's the same thing. Like, for instance, if you're just looking at the window and you don't see exactly what you're looking for, just tell Greg, and half the time he'll just go back and cut something specifically for you in the back. I mean, it really is. You can't beat the service as well as the quality. So, again, just I cannot say enough good things about it.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. Also, they have a beer fridge on the left.
That they do.
Grab a six-pack. It's normally $9. Tell Greg, hey, I heard about LB's on the Beer Garden. You'll save $3. You say, well, that's just $3. It's $3. Six-pack for $6 is better than a six-pack of the exact same thing for $9. And all you have to do is say, I heard about it on the Beer Garden. Helps you, helps us, makes Greg happy. Everyone's happy.
A dollar beer is, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You can't do it better than
that.
Yeah,
and we're not talking about
it. And that's about, and yeah, as a Bud Light man myself, like, you're not even going to go get a six pack for Bud Light for $6, let alone good quality craft beer.
So as we watch this, and again, we'll try to put this in some context. We've talked about this before. As we watch this, Tiger Woods is, it's his second shot on the, I'm not sure, but he's three shots back. He's got, like you said, we'll call it 12. Let's see. Here it is. He's
on the fifth hole now.
On the fifth hole. You were right. So he's got,
he's trailing by three.
Three shots back. He and Justin Thomas, as we record this, three shots back of Brooks Koepka. If Tiger Woods were to win, this is the PGA Championship. It's in suburban St. Louis, I believe.
Correct.
If Tiger Woods were to win today, or when he wins a major like this, what does it mean for golf, your opinion?
I think what we've realized now that Tiger is back, and I'm sure like super golf fans may get bothered by this, but you realize when he's playing at a high level and he's competitive with the best of the best, you realize how just nobody else matters. It's unbelievable. Like it's even like I say this as someone who the first go around, I openly rooted against Tiger. Like I wanted Tiger to be in the tournament because I just knew that it like made it better. But I wanted him basically to finish second in the most painful way fashion like possible. Like when he lost to Y.E. Yang, like the Tiger killer, Y.E. Yang, like that was like one of the greatest days of my life. Because like it was fun to watch him get beat. Like, cause I mean that's kind of the way we're wired. Like he was truly like the unbeatable foe. And then, like, if you're talking just from a story perspective, like, taking down Tiger Woods was a heck of a thing. It'd never been done before.
Yeah.
And a guy with hybrids out there was doing it. Like, it was unbelievable to watch. But now, like, that's kind of the other thing that I've really noticed. So, for instance, you've got some really good young players that, for the most part, seem pretty likable. But you realize, even though these guys are winning, they move the needle nothing. Like, well, it just doesn't matter.
I keep up with sports for a living. I do.
You're a professional sports writer.
And I watch it, and I can respect how good they are in the shots, but I don't know who the hell these guys are. And then Tiger shows up with his hat turned backwards and his sunglasses on, walking in.
That was a good look.
It was a great look.
We had to put him on 59 watch. Just showing up like that, I thought the course, I'm surprised everyone else even played today.
But it turns my head. And I've always said I'm kind of the gauge guy on this. And I catch myself on Sundays. I've got Twitter, and a lot of the people that I follow on Twitter are really into golf, and they'll do all the Tiger stuff, and I'll kind of keep an eye on it. And if it gets going, like it's interesting right now, I've got it on. If he fades, I flip away. If he makes a charge, I'm locked in. But it's all about him. And again, I'm a guy who covers sports for a living. So if it's me this way, you know my friend Joe Schmo in Dubuque is exactly like that.
the TV numbers show it. It's not even a coincidence. Like, for instance, I don't remember if it was sports TV ratings or I don't remember if it was maybe awful announcing, but one of them put out a spreadsheet of the exact same tournaments, the TV ratings from this year versus the tournaments from last year, the tournaments that Tiger was competitive in. I think on average, the numbers were up 150%. And it's insane to think about, like, because this is where I think golf is in a weird spot. And I openly admit, even though I like golf, golf's a niche sport. And I completely and openly acknowledge that. So what I do think is interesting is they have these inflated purse values, and the money that they're playing for is really, really high. But all of that has been from TV money from Tiger. We're clearly at the end of Tiger's road. Like, I don't know what golf does in the next 10 to 15 years, because they've got a bunch of really good TV contracts that are coming up, and they're no different than anyone else. They're falling victim to cord cutting. And
yeah, that's exactly what it is. And when you have cord cutting, it's harder for mainstream people to get attached to somebody because they don't watch it. And so you don't have a superstar.
Yes. And then, you know, we've talked about it, like, even with, like, football rights. Like, clearly some of these new TV deals are not going to be what certain people were expecting. And as you've pointed out, when you have businesses that are used to getting a check for X amount of money, they're not really good on, oh, well, we'll just start cutting back.
No.
That's typically not how this thing works.
No, that's not how it goes.
So, but golf's in a weird spot. Like, it's one thing to say, well, we're going to keep looking for new revenue streams, but for instance, like football, I think we've shown there's a pretty big desire and hunger. So people are going to go out of the way to find football. I don't think if you have to go out of your way to find golf, I don't think you are.
No, not mainstream. No, I mean, the hardcore golf guys like you and Chase and people like that who love it, y'all will find it, but
I found myself, like, I'm about as big of a golf fan probably as anyone. Come this time of year, man, I'm so ready for football. Like, I'm just ready for a different sport. And, like, it's a very, very long calendar. I mean, they're playing legitimate tournaments in January. We're sitting here in the middle of August, and their season's not even done yet. I mean, this is their last major, but they've still got another 4 weeks of big money tournaments. And so it's just too long. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you and I love basketball, but it's the same thing, man, with the NBA. When we get down to the finals, I'm kind of spent. And especially if it's like when it's just
kind of
inevitable.
Well, it's because people like you and I are in the minority. We actually watch the middle of October.
Sure.
The average basketball fan doesn't even register the NBA until Christmas, and then they leave it again
until April.
Well, they watch it on Christmas Day because the NBA is brilliant about owning Christmas Day.
Yes.
And then they leave it again until after the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And then they come back and like, okay, well, now I'm in. And the NBA is really a playoff season.
It's a playoff season. Yes, correct.
And the playoffs last 2 months.
The reason why every series is 7 games.
Every superstar has been in the playoffs. And
exactly.
If you don't play in the playoffs, no one knows who the hell you are.
Exactly. So it is fascinating because all that Tiger Woods has shown is he is golf. I mean, it's still unbelievable. Like, you have, like, that's the thing. Like, some of these young guys are so freaking good, but it just doesn't matter, like, at all. And, like, I can even rationalize, like you just realize, like, it's like started to think about, like, some of the best major moments. All of them are with Tiger.
Well, like, just then, Tyrell Hatton knocks a shot in. And if you had given me 4,000 guesses, I wouldn't know who Tyrell Hatton was.
We just had a
frankly, Brooks Koepka could walk down the street, and I wouldn't know who Brooks Koepka was. And I think he's won several majors.
Well, so he's won back-to-back U.S. Opens. He's probably the most underrated player. He has oodles. But this is exactly what we're talking about. This guy has oodles and oodles and oodles of talent. He's remarkably gifted. No one
knows who he is, and nor do they care. Exactly. No one knows anything about him.
And if part of it is somewhat his fault, he is very boring. Like, the same thing like we were talking about yesterday. Adam Scott, if Adam Scott had a personality, I think he would be doing like Scrooge McDuck backstrokes in cash because he's a good-looking guy. He's an Australian, but he's boring.
We see it in baseball with Mike Trout. The truth about Mike Trout is he's
boring.
He's a really good guy. But he's kind of boring. There's no real personality. We're going to talk about Bryce Harper a little bit later in the show. I still contend he's the only person in all of Major League Baseball who has a legitimate Q rating.
Yeah, he has star quality. He does. He does because now, and also on top of having a little bit of flair, you know, he grows the hair out. Like, you know, he's clearly a good-looking dude, and he leans into it. But you're right. The biggest difference to me between Bryce Harper and Mike Trout is Bryce Harper, like, lets us know who he is.
Yeah, he lets us in.
Yeah.
Yeah. His free agency will be interesting. We'll get to it in a minute. But his free agency will be interesting to see if Major League Baseball can turn his free agency into a front page story during the football season. He's from Las Vegas. The winter meetings are in Las Vegas. He's a free agent. He's going to have big-time offers from major markets, L.A., Chicago, Philly, maybe even Atlanta. Who knows? New York, perhaps. I don't know. Can they turn his free agency into a big enough story? Because the other free – we're going to be honest here. The other big free agency is Manny Machado. And because Manny Machado is Latin, it's not going to register.
No.
That's the truth.
I think you're 100% right. Now, to me, what is fascinating is – baseball has never really tried, like, for instance, I think the NFL and I think the NBA are very conscious of trying to, I don't know how successful they always are. I think the NFL is probably pretty successful at it, but both of them clearly make concerted efforts to be year-round sports from a news cycle.
Yeah.
And I've never seen baseball really try, like, even like winter meetings, like, you've never really seen baseball try to make the winter meetings a big...
Well, they make it a niche.
Right. And so...
The NFL turns the draft and free agency into major news cycles.
The Combine's now a television event.
The Combine's a television event. The NBA has found a way to actually... They've actually... Give them credit. They actually have turned the Summer League into a fairly... Moved it all to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
They've made it a fairly interesting news thing. The NBA draft gets a lot of pub. And NBA free agency is a huge story. And then we're talking about whether you like basketball or don't like basketball, like football, don't like football. It's what gets eyeballs. And both of those sports have figured it out. Baseball can't.
And it is fascinating because the NFL and NBA do it in very different ways. The NBA does it primarily because they've built such a star-driven league. The stars kind of, let's get real, the stars are very dramatic and they create these storylines that go through free agency, that, you know, guys demanding trades. And clearly, I think you can make the argument that I don't think any other sports league in the world, I don't think there's another sports league where the players have as much power as they do in basketball. Like, I just can't.
International soccer, perhaps, but that's on a different scale.
Yeah.
Yeah, in America, certainly.
And in fairness with international soccer, there's no draft. So.
Right.
It's not like you can build a team in a certain way, so I can understand where the players would have a little more power, but like to me, then you just think of football, and football basically does it by largely just understanding that in America, we basically have two seasons. We have actual football season, and then we have waiting for football season, and during the waiting for football season, they figure out really good ways to stay in the news.
Let me ask you this. We're going to get to Chad Kelly in a second because he had a huge night last night for Denver. I think he's going to push Paxton Lynch out of that backup job.
That seems pretty fair.
But there was also more NFL controversy, if you will, on these. There were a couple of hits that looked like form tackles that drew flags. I talked to Mike Dettillier about this when I was guest hosting in Memphis, and he said, hey, look, it's preseason. This is the time that you throw those flags. This is how you get your point across. But when the regular season starts on that first Thursday night, when it's Philly and...
Ooh, who is the opener?
I can't remember. Anyway, the first Sunday of games. Let's just do that. The first Sunday of games when everybody goes, okay, these count, and they're flipping on. And they are the referees still going to call this? And if so, what's the backlash going to be?
I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Mike Dottilia by any stretch of imagination. I don't think that you can dismiss it as this is preseason, we're setting a tone, because like we started to look at catch rule. Like, to me, the preseason, especially from an officiating standpoint, it's usually a pretty good barometer. Okay, this is what it's going to be. And we're getting a pretty good preview. And to me, the truth is, when I read how the rule was written, I remember thinking like, oh, this is going to slow the game down. Like, it's already bad enough to where people, you know, if someone throws it over the middle, you know, as soon as we had the defenseless receiver rule and everyone was rolling their eyes. And I mean, to me, the other flip side of it is this league is very much about protecting scoring and protecting offenses.
And it's also about being 3 hours and 10 minutes so that you can
go in the window.
In the window, game starts at noon, a game starts at 3:15, a game starts at 7. That's your Sunday, and if you start messing with that by going to 3:45, unless it's in overtime, people are going to get pissed.
100%. And
overtime is forgivable. If it's not overtime, it's not forgivable. And if you have all these replays and stuff, I don't know, man. I think the NFL's got to be careful here.
I think they 100% have to be careful, but I just think this is the way that it's going, especially when you have a sport that is as scrutinized, and deservedly so, from a certain perspective, like when you're hiding medical records from players. Like, that's probably not great, not a great look.
Not the best look.
But the whole point is, like, now if you look at almost every single rule change that we've seen, it has been designed to protect players. And, man, it is getting harder and harder and harder to play defense.
I don't even know how you would teach it. I watched a hit last night that was absolute textbook. It appeared that it was shoulder pad to the chest, and it drew a flag, and the defender just looked lost. Like, what did I do? I think we've gotten everybody to understand you can't lead with your head. If you lead with your head, it's going to get called. But if you lead with your shoulder,
that's kind of what you're supposed to do.
That's really how it's taught. And if they can't do that and you start having to grab, and maybe the goal here is to take hits away and turn it every game into the 40s from a scoring standpoint. I don't know. I know that it's about protecting players, and I'm absolutely for protecting players. I think these idiots that wear the hats that say make football violent again, you're not understanding the current climate.
Well, if you want the sport to last, you would never wear that hat.
Right. You're not understanding the climate.
Yes.
Today. Right. But it is a physical game, and if you take away the way that you're taught to play appropriate defense, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. If Dottilia's wrong and you're right, and the way that it's being called in the preseason is the way it's called in week one, it's going to be the major story when we wake up, when you take to the airwaves and we take to the podcast on Monday, September the 10th. That will be the main story you're talking about.
Well, and the great part about football is it's not like we'll overreact one way or the other.
but we won't be overreacting to a game. We'll be overreacting to calls. And it'll be like the NFL will at that point either have to say, hey, look, this is the way it is. This is the way the game's going to get played. Or the NFL has to figure out how do you backtrack from this without looking like you're endorsing violence.
Which is, I don't know, it's like, because to me, like, it's a fascinating like thought exercise, because if you're not allowed to be, because let's be real, this affects the back end of a defense probably more than anyone.
Yes.
Basically safeties,
corners,
maybe
nickelbacks.
I guess some linebackers, I guess to an extent, but really it's the safeties and the nickelbacks.
It's really on the vertical plays.
Correct. So I guess to me, like, this will just start putting, it'll kind of diminish the value of back end guys a little bit, and I think it's going to, in the end, like, so for instance, the reason why I'm saying, like, here is, like, I always am interested by unintended consequences. And to me, I think one of the unintended consequences will be maybe even more emphasis on defensive linemen, because that might be the only way you can really stop people is a pass rush or just dominating up front, because the idea of trying to dominate with, you know, these big physical safeties and kind of coming up and run support and whatnot, like, I can see where that value's diminished.
You know, you're right. I hadn't even thought about that. That's a great point. It would put more premium on speed in the secondary.
Yes.
And not, like, we're just
cover guys.
Pure speed. Yes. Yeah, your safeties would start becoming cover guys because you would no longer want that enforcer.
Yes.
Because all the enforcer's doing is getting you 15-yard penalties and getting kicked out of games.
And on
getting
top,
kicked out of games. On top, where in the NFL's a 45-man roster, 53-man roster, you can't afford that.
Well, and on top of that, like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would love to see the number of drives that result in points that include a 15-yard penalty. I would imagine a very high percentage of them. I mean, if you're getting a free 15 yards in that league, I got to think that makes all the world of difference.
Well, it's certainly leading to 3 points most every time.
And when you look at that league where the difference between the margin for error is so small. I mean, you know, the worst team in the NFL is still, I mean, even the Browns, like, they had multiple games where they should have won.
The difference between 7-9 and being a wild card team is 2 or 3 games where you just made a couple mistakes.
Exactly. And so, to me, I can see where there's a change in emphasis of what defensive coordinators want to do. Like, to me, that is going to be one of the more fascinating kind of what are the unintended consequences.
It would almost make it more of the 7-on-7 game that we see at the high school level throughout the spring and the summer.
And I think in general, I don't want to, like, overreact and be like, oh, well, I mean, it's obviously still.
Well, there's a giant if in here.
Sure.
If this is enforced the way it's been enforced in the preseason, all of these things will start to, and Detillier could well be right. I mean, he's a pretty smart guy when it comes to football. So if he's right, we're already overreacting,
sure,
and this is going to go away. But if he's not right and this becomes a permanent thing, what you're saying is precisely accurate. It will change the way teams draft.
Yes. And to me, the only reason why I think it is a decent barometer, because if you look at what the point of the rule change was, it is protection of players. And I think the NFL, I think, is very conscious right now. Even though they seem to, like, handle PR poorly, they do. It does appear to me, though, they are very aware,
yes,
that they are facing an issue.
There's no question they hear it. All right, we're going to get to Chad Kelly in a second. First, let me tell you, this podcast is brought to you by Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Community Mortgage is the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. So ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option that allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. Send him an email. It's jlowe, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. We're also brought to you by Strategic Partners in Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency, works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here is why SPM is really good and different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub your workout. The writing, the client, the production, the editing, it's done solely by their staff, created uniquely for their clients. And lastly, an Ole Miss grad, a Mississippian, and a really good friend of ours is a partner in the firm. So give them a call. See just how great they are. It's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. And the podcast is brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions from 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. A popular trip for visitors that don't have as much time is the inshore trips for speckled trout and triple tail. Sometimes it's called blackfish. You can reach John through his website, tunachasacharters.com. That's tuna, C-H-A-S-A, charters.com, his Facebook page, or you can call John, 228-348-7817. All right.
All right, I want to ask you this before we, because I do want to get to the Chad Kelly stuff, because you know me. If I have the chance to talk about football,
I'm
ready.
Let's get to it, because he looked great last night.
I did want to ask you this, though.
Okay.
So we've discussed, like, the niche Like, I think golf is a niche sport, and I think it's, I think data probably suggests it, but it, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think there's sometimes there's things that can be good about a niche sport, but in terms of, for you, someone who's been a columnist, a sports writer for over 20 something years.
Okay.
How big would Tiger Woods winning be in the grand scheme of, and I'm understanding, like, with the caveat being, it's sports. At the end of the day, none of this matters. But I'm talking about, from a sports story, how big is this? Because I think I could make a case, this could be one of the biggest comeback stories we've ever seen.
Yeah, it would lead every sportscast. It would lead every talk radio show, except for the ones that are in markets where they're just niche. It would completely override a day of baseball where you have pennant races going on. It would completely override NFL preseason for 48 to 72 hours. Unless Urban Meyer is resolved today, it would override that story for at least a couple of days.
What's the last story that would be this big in your opinion?
In golf?
It's
the biggest story in golf since Jack Nicklaus won the Masters. It would be the biggest story in golf since, frankly, Tiger won his first Masters.
I think that's probably fair.
In terms of sports, it's,
what is like a comparable story? I would say, in your opinion, because I understand. Like, I think the trouble that I have is I inherently understand how big this is for golf in general, just from a business perspective, how big this would be if he were to win. So I do think
I've a story in sports since LeBron James beat the Warriors.
I mean,
it's the biggest. It's
so basically the biggest non-football story we've seen this decade.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
well, the only other ones in the last 10 years that I would say are comparable. The Cubs winning the World Series.
Okay.
The Red Sox winning the World Series.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. The first one, I think, was a big
deal. Yeah, for
sure. The 04 one was a big deal.
The 04 World Series, and that was 14 years ago. The Cubs was 2 years ago.
You're welcome, Boston.
Those are huge sports stories.
Because it felt like the
Cubs. But it's big. Yeah, it's big.
It really did feel like when the Cubs finally won a World Series, we didn't really have the. Okay, the last chasing story, the story that like once the Cubs won the World Series, like it was a punchline for a reason. And I'm not.
Oh no, sure, no. And you and absolutely.
You and I both know the Cubs winning the World Series had nothing to do with bad luck or whatnot.
It was a romantic story.
Sure.
It was a romantic story. This is a Tiger Woods winning. We live. This is why people who screw up and don't kind of own it are dumb.
So dumb.
Tiger Woods is kind of a romantic story because most of us, look, I'm writing about this in 10 Thoughts about Tony Fine. It's a complicated thing. It's a nuanced thing. Tiger Woods is complicated.
Oh, yeah.
Tiger Woods requires nuance. Most of us are complicated.
Yes.
Tiger Woods has demons. Most of us have some demons. Tiger Woods has some issues. Most of us have some issues. Tiger Woods made some mistakes. Most of us make mistakes. We all can relate. We used to not be able to. Your point at the beginning of the show. We used to not be able to relate to this guy because he was like Michael freaking Jordan.
He was just a machine. He
was a robot.
Yes. And he was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was like, you can't.
Everybody loved him.
Yes.
And he was polarizing because you either loved to watch him win and he grew the sport in monumental ways. He brought African Americans into the game who had never watched before.
Not to get political, but it's a lot like Trump, where one way or the other, you had a strong opinion.
Yes.
You were either strongly in favor or, God, everything he did bothered you.
Or you hated him.
Yes. But one way or the other, you cared. One way or the other.
But now he's human now.
He's sympathetic.
And we watch him and we think, like, I want to see, because I have a feeling that if you ask what happens if Tiger wins, I think Tiger Woods' press conference after winning a major is one of the most emotional, cathartic things. I get choked up thinking about what it would be like because we don't really know, because we've not been inside his shoes, we don't really know what this has been like for him. Because 10 years ago, this guy that we're watching right here, this guy was on his way to being the greatest golfer of all time, to being the Muhammad Ali of golf. And then he had this happen to him, and he's still the most watched golfer, but no one now says, hey, he's the greatest golfer of all time.
No, and one thing that I think has helped him almost, I do think now that he's been away for a while and he's come back and had some success, I do think that makes us look back and think about how great he was.
Yeah.
But that's your point. It's everything's past tense.
But we don't know what's gone through his mind in all this. Is he thought, man, I know he said I'm going to get back, but maybe in his heart of hearts he's doubted.
He kept saying, I'm going to get back. And we saw him smoke and mirror it. And to me, what is so unbelievable is it's not just, hey, this guy's life came crashing down. Hey, this guy had one of the most public, horrific scandals. It was a personal scandal that you can possibly ever think. It was more than just that. This guy also has a fused back.
Yeah, no, his body fell apart too.
It's a mental, physical, entire comeback. Like, I just can't think of many things else. Like, I guess when Peyton won a Super Bowl, the problem is it just felt like Peyton was on the team. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But this is totally different. It's why you always hear me say, I hate I never guy. I would never.
If you and I both agree with this, we would like to think. That's probably the answer.
I have no idea what it is like to live in that sort of rarefied air where everything you could want is at your disposal. Let's think about this. If you're Tiger Woods at the peak of his career, everybody wants a piece of him. And you can read into that multiple things. Everybody wants his time. Everybody wants him to take their money. Women are everywhere. He can get virtual.
Turns out there's a very strong relationship between guys with money and women.
Money, power, success.
It's weird how it works that way.
Good looking guy.
Yes.
Charismatic. Everything he could ever want.
Extremely talented.
Was right there, and he worked his butt off, and he was successful. And then all of a sudden, his body starts to fall apart. His dad dies. All of the things that were these stalwarts for his life, because he talks about, you know, firing his glutes and all that stuff. This was a guy that was very in tune with his body, and all of a sudden his body starts to fall apart. And then his life starts to fall apart, and his vices get exposed. And come on, man, you're all out there. We're all out there. We all are susceptible to vices, and we don't know what would happen to us in those shoes. I want him to win in large part because I kind of want him to give that press conference where he opens up and he tells people, this is what it's been like. This is what I've learned. This is how it's changed me as a person, as a man, as a golfer in so many ways, because I have a feeling that Tiger Woods is waiting to express himself. I could be wrong, but I have that feeling that this guy, when and if he wins on a major level and everybody wants a piece of him, I think his story is going to be different.
Now, and the other flip side, I will also, to your point, Tiger's also in this weird spot in his life where he's clearly coming to the end of his competitive career. I'm not saying it's over, but he's clearly, there's a reason why you don't win a bunch of majors after you turn 40, let alone after you turn 40 with back surgery, knee surgery, God knows how many times.
Because you're competing against all these cats that are in their 20s and their physical primes and all this
hungry.
Stuff. Yeah, well, they're so good.
And then when you factor in what he's trying to do, he's at this weird spot where he still clearly wants to be competitive, plays at the highest level. And I think in his mind, I do think he thinks he's still chasing Jack Nicklaus's record. And I wouldn't bet on it, but I am in this weird spot where I don't bet against it. But he's also in this weird spot in his career where he is now becoming, he's getting closer to the point of his career where Tiger Woods has to be more than a golfer. He's about to be Tiger Woods, the golf businessman. He's going to start building more and more golf courses. And when you're doing that, it's like anything else.
And that's why I hope he opens up.
It's a PR thing. Like, you know, you've got to, I'm sure there are plenty of people out there that would just say, I would just like to have a course designed by Tiger Woods, and they'll pay a ton of money. But that business of name brand golf architects, it's a very highly competitive business. And I think Tiger is very aware when he's going to start getting into that, he has to start being more likable.
Oh, that's why I hope he opens up. And I think he will, because it would change his storyline immediately. Tiger Woods is the guy that proved that just because you bottom out, you can still come back. You can still come back. He doesn't. The bottom doesn't have to be the end. That doesn't have to be the end of your arc.
And there are, I don't know, maybe I'm getting older. Like, that's might be a part of it. But it just feels to me now like there just aren't many cool stories. And I don't even mean like, oh, because I do think, especially people in our profession, some people can really go overboard on the, oh, you know, the story. But sports does have a narrative element to it.
Oh, yeah, you need a story to write a story.
Like, now there's not a ton out there. And this, to me, would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, the closest thing to a really cool story lately was Justin Verlander admitting that when his body was falling apart a little bit and he was getting hit hard in Detroit and he couldn't get healthy, he started not only kind of doubting, am I done, but he started having some really dark thoughts.
And all 7 baseball fans heard that story.
Exactly. And literally, yes, to the point, the woman who was the rock for him,
yes, was a supermodel.
Is a supermodel who is one of the most recognizable models on the planet.
Yes.
Everyone knows who Kate Upton is.
Yes.
Kate Upton's curating, whether you think she's too fat or any of that crap, Kate Upton's curating is off the charts.
So you think she's a little more recognizable than me?
A little.
Okay.
Here's the deal. He's a Cy Young Award winner and a World Series Game 7 winner, and she's a lot more recognizable than him.
Well, I mean, the truth is, Tom Brady's... I mean, if he's not the most successful quarterback of all time.
Well, yeah, he is the most successful quarterback of all time, and he's married to a model who's more famous than he is.
Yes. Worldwide. Now, in America, he's, I guess, I don't know, that would be a fun toss-up. Who do you think is in America? Who do you think? Because the other flip side of it is...
I would say Giselle is still.
I think so, too, just because of half the country's women.
Yeah, and among women, it's not even
yes.
close. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, that's what's fascinating me. All right, but now on to
Speaking
actual
Speaking of
football.
Quarterbacks, okay. Chad Kelly was really good.
Yes.
Now, he was tearing up twos and threes, but he was really good. We've yes. seen this before. This guy, two things. One, he's healthy finally.
Huge part.
Yeah. He's got all the arm talent in the world, and I think, and Chad was in this house less than a year ago. I always found Chad to be very likable.
I agree. I think Chad has a natural charisma about him.
And this is going to come across like kissing ass, and I don't mean for it to. I really don't, because I'm not this guy. He got humbled a little bit, and I think Chad...
The draft, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and he got hurt, and his senior year was not what he thought it would be, and he surrounded himself with a lot better people. Our friend Ben Craddock.
Yeah.
Ben's become a big part of Chad's life. Chad went down to Jackson for basically a week for Ben's camp. I know that Ben has – I don't think Ben would like the word mentor, but I think if you ask Chad, he would probably tell you that Ben's become a mentor of sorts. And last night, it's preseason, and you got to be careful, and you have to throw that caveat out. But you and I watch a lot of football, and I know what I saw.
Yeah.
I saw an NFL quarterback.
I almost think we've weirdly now jumped the shark on having to qualify everything we see in preseason with it's just preseason. And yes, I think we all intellectually understand the fact that these games don't count. But there were a lot of guys on that field that were trying to get jobs. And
well, it's much like summer league. Yeah.
Everybody's playing hard. I refuse to act like it doesn't mean anything. Yes, the playbook is limited. Yes, you're not spending all week preparing for playing this team and there's not that element. But at the same time, you were watching a guy make plays against other people that were trying to stop him from making plays. And I almost think like we overqualify, like preseason. I think we've gotten to the point now where, like, for instance, part of the reason why I've done, not to talk about my fantasy team, because I hate that guy, but like, but for instance, one of the reasons why I've had
Kate Upton still on my fantasy team, by the way.
But like, one of the biggest reasons why I've been good in fantasy football the last 3 years is because I watch an insane amount of preseason football.
Sure.
Because I've sat there and gone, this is a pretty good indicator. Like they are, this is tryouts for a lot of people.
If you're the Broncos, you saw what you saw. If you're Vance Joseph and the people in Denver, you saw what you saw last night. You've seen what you've seen out of Paxton Lynch. And it's very hard for an NFL team to bail on a first-round pick.
Yes.
Because it's admitting
a lot.
It's admitting with a giant neon light, we were wrong. We were wrong.
And you traded up to get him.
And we traded up to get him. It was a really bad trade. We were wrong. That's hard.
Yes.
I get it. But don't you, as you get close to week three, which is the penultimate week of the preseason, don't you think about giving Chad Kelly a long look as the number two quarterback?
100%, because what has been the fastest way that we've seen in the NFL for teams to have sustained success?
Quarterback play, baby.
And on top of that, quarterbacks on cheap contracts. And you can't.
It's how the Seahawks won a Super Bowl.
You can't be on a cheaper contract than Chad is on.
Yeah, Chad's a long way away from being able to put himself in position to get a big contract.
So if you're the Broncos, and that's the other thing. Like, so you brought in Case Keenum, but Case Keenum's on a short-term deal. You didn't commit to Case Keenum for the future. So if you're the Broncos, like, doesn't Ty kind of go to Chad Kelly for those factors that we're discussing?
Yes, absolutely. If you can admit you made a mistake with Paxton Lynch, and I think they can. They seem to be hinting that they're ready to do that.
I think they would have been, because Elway does also strike me as, even though it's embarrassing when a first-round quarterback busts, Elway seems to me to be very quick on pulling a trigger.
Well, he has the capital in Denver on as a player and as an executive to admit, hey, man, we made a mistake. It happens. My bad. Mea culpa.
What do you want us to do? Not draft? We didn't have a quarterback.
Yeah.
What do you want us to not? Like, it doesn't matter in this league if you don't have one.
We effed it up.
Like, we took the wrong one.
But, hey, we've done some good things, remember? Remember the Super Bowls? So give us a break. And I think he can do that. I mean, it's not like in Cincinnati where people are like, oh, my God, you've never done anything right. In Denver, they've done things right, so they have room. I know what I saw. He really looked good. And if Chad Kelly's healthy, and the whole thing about – I'm so tired of people talking about Chad Kelly and what happened at Clemson. My God, that was years ago, and it wasn't that big of a deal.
At the end of the day, like – let's break this down. Help me out here. At the end of the day, all he did was yell at his coach, correct?
He yelled at his coach.
And caused a scene.
But he paid for it. And he's never really done anything since then. He got involved in an altercation, and that's all it was, at a bar in Buffalo. And he had to do some community service. He did it. It's over. He's not done anything else. And when he was in Oxford, truth is, I mean, I never heard even rumors about Chad Kelly.
The truth is, we heard way more about Shea Patterson, who they tried to...
There's no doubt about
who
that.
Who they tried to present as, like, a model Boy Scout.
Yeah, and that's not what his reputation was.
No. I think this is what's fascinating, and I'm sure there are other examples out there, but, man, given the... I use crimes in air quotes, but giving someone sins or actual indiscretions, Chad Kelly has been given a really bad hand. I mean, for God's sakes, if it weren't for Bo Wallace getting hurt against Arkansas.
He's the quarterback at
Indiana.
At Indiana. It's unbelievable.
Like, that's unbelievable to me. Like, and then in the NFL, he was literally Mr. Irrelevant.
Yeah, last pick.
The very last pick.
Maybe, like, as a favor.
Yes, clearly. It seemed to be very heavily. It seemed to be that there was definitely. I think it seemed to me that Jim Kelly put in a call to John Elway. Said, take him.
But if Chad Kelly becomes an NFL starter and leads his team to the playoffs, and we're jumping the shark a lot here.
Yes, obviously.
But he's a really good story because his uncle is a sympathetic figure.
Sure.
That everybody likes. Everybody likes Jim Kelly.
And by the way, that's another, but like to your point again about the stories, like Jim Kelly's got a very complicated, complex, you know, clearly had the, he also had his own bouts with infidelity and obviously on top of the family stuff with the son, like we know all that story. And then on, you throw in cancer and everything, like it is like, it does show there is a redemptive process. Like,
of course, because most people.
This guy said he didn't want to go play in Buffalo.
Yeah.
He straight up played in the USFL because he didn't want to go play in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Like, and this guy's now arguably one of the most popular post-football athletes in the world. I mean, he just won the V Award.
Yeah, everybody likes Jim Kelly. We're all cheering for
like
him.
Like, he's more or less, like, revered now.
People, you cheer for people. Come on, you cheer for comebacks. We all love comebacks.
It's why I'm telling you, man. It's why the whole and Tiger's not, he's not really fading, but like it's, he's grinding and he's two back now.
Well, as we watch this, he's just grinding.
Yes, yeah. It is.
He's not consistent off the tee right now, and so yes, he's having
every,
to.
He's missed every fairway, and right now he is. Now he did just birdie to get to 10. I think
so.
That
he's a shot
him,
out.
So he's a shot back.
Two shots.
Brooks now to, so Brooks birdied again back to get back to even. But this on top of the other thing that would make Tiger Woods unbelievable is he's never won a major championship trailing, entering the final round. Like this is something even Tiger Woods, elite, unbelievable. Like Tiger Woods in his prime never did if he could chase him down.
Yeah, it's 3:15 as we talk, and he's halfway through his round, and TVs all over the country are just keeping an eye on it.
Now speaking of what's going to happen, what do we think about Urban Meyer? So it appears we should probably know this week, right? That would be the 2-week time frame I think that they gave.
I think I do. Everybody I talked to, like, I had Ryan Brown on the Beer Garden last week, and Ryan just says they're keeping him. They're determined to keep him. They kind of caught a news cycle break because of what happened with Maryland and DJ Durkin. But then Maryland, as soon as the story comes out, they suspend Durkin, and they're clearly going to fire him. And Ohio State's kind of back. Ohio State would love for Tiger Woods to win the U.S. Open.
Yeah,
the PGA.
Ohio State could use any kind of distraction in the news cycle.
Yeah, they need stories. But I think they're still going to do everything they can to pin this on people above Urban Meyer and find a way for Urban Meyer to keep his job. I think Ohio State has proven that there's nothing bigger for them than football.
I guess, but man.
Hope I'm wrong. I know what I would do if I were
there. This does remind me, though, of a situation where they try to go down this path. Like, for instance, they tried to keep Jim Tressel, and then they kind of backed themselves into a corner to where this just seems to me like it's going to reach the point where it's painfully obvious, no matter what they want to do, that I just don't see how in this climate, I don't see how you can keep Urban Meyer. And the other thing is, it's almost like every time they put Zach Smith out in front when he thinks he's helping, holy cow. Like, you realize, like, I don't see a situation where this gets any better for Urban Meyer. And this doesn't feel like the type of thing that is, because here's the other thing, Neil. The lawsuits haven't started. And you and I both know there will be lawsuits.
Oh, it absolutely will be lawsuits. There's no question about it.
So it just seems to me like, in the end, there's going to be no alternative. Like, I'm not even saying, like, they're going to do this for the right reasons. I just don't think they're going to be left with a choice.
All right, last topic. I want to get your thoughts on it. Your Cardinals, by the way, just put up 4. They were down 2-0. They're now up 4-2. They're making a charge in the National League Central.
Yeah, we're coming in hot for that road spot on a wild card game.
Well, they're only 5.5 out of the division between two teams that are having a hard time. The Brewers are, they're 7-7 with the Braves right now, bases loaded in the 7th. The Cubs play tonight. Cubs play the Nationals tonight. It's going to be the big topic on ESPN, Bryce Harper's future. It's been a big topic in Chicago all weekend. I've been surprised at the number of people with educated opinions who have come out and said the Cubs should not go after Bryce Harper. I'm in the exact opposite boat. I look at it from an intellectual standpoint and say the Cubs should absolutely go after Bryce Harper.
What? Here's my big question, though. What do you think the framework is? And I'm not, like, holding you to this, but best educated guess, what do you think that contract looks like?
10 years, $350 million with opt-outs after 3, 5, and 7 years.
Okay. And
roughly.
I do understand, like, your point is, okay, well, there's like, he's at this point. He makes them better. Like, and I think this year will be an outlier for Harper. I think
Well, even his power numbers are still there. Yeah, his batting average is down.
I just think it'll be an outlier. Yeah. And I think it's somewhat understandable to an extent.
Because there's some BABIP stuff that's...
But I just look at every team that has tried to sign these guys to 10-year deals, it has crippled the teams. The Angels have never been the same since they got Pujols.
No, but what it would allow the Cubs to do... When Pujols was in his 30s. Harper's sure. 26.
I agree there's an age thing, but it just...
It would allow the Cubs to trade from their base a little bit, which I think they need to do. It would allow them to go out and, like, explore, say, a deal with the Mets in the offseason where you could put a real package together that the Mets would have to look at with a team like the Mets. It would allow you to do that. It would allow you to go out and get some pitching. It would allow you... They're about to get a new TV contract. They're one of the baseball teams that's making money hand over fist. They're going to have their own network. They've got a national fan base. When you think about national fan bases, it's Yankees, Red Sox, 1 and 2. Because every time they play on ESPN, it's off the charts. It's Cubs. It's Cardinals. It's maybe the Dodgers. That's it.
And even the Cubs are in a different category. So, like, just think about... Imagine if the Cardinals lost at the rate that the Cubs lost at for
100 years.
Yes. The Cardinals would not have – they wouldn't – no matter anyone says, they would not have the best fans in baseball.
No, they built their reputation on winning.
Right.
The Cubs built theirs on lovable losers and Wrigley and all the stuff and Theo Epstein and that group have gone in – and they've turned Wrigley around. They've built. If you've been up there, you know they've created all of these revenue streams.
Yes,
they're about to have another big rep. They can absolutely afford Bryce Harper, and they absolutely can afford to pay the taxes on top of Bryce. Here's the funniest thing in sports. I love this. When people do this in sports, I giggle every time. Well, I just don't think we should pay those taxes. You're not paying the taxes. The ownership's paying the taxes. It's not affecting you, and they're not going to do it if they can't afford it.
No, the only thing that bothers me on the luxury tax takes are the people that act like Kevin Durant is a saint. That one bothers me.
Kevin Durant's an idiot.
But I'm just trying to look at it from the perspective of Bryce Harper is, I guess, no worse than the 5th best player in baseball. I'd say he's reasonably probably... the 2nd or 3rd best player in baseball.
He's a top 5 player.
But he's still a corner outfielder.
Well, he's actually can play center field, though. But you're right. He's a corner outfielder. The Cubs would figure out Hayward's going to opt in. The Cubs would figure out between Harper and Hayward who plays right, who plays center. It lets them do something with Schwarber, perhaps, with Happ, perhaps, certainly with Almora. Here's my problem. There's a lot of people with the Cub fans. And everybody falls in love with the laundry, and they fall in love with the people. And the Cubs are a team full of pretty good guys. I mean, I think most everybody agrees Kyle Schwarber's
they're likable.
Kyle Schwarber's a good guy.
I'm a Cardinal fan, and I told you this before they even won the World Series. Like, this team has a likability to them.
Yeah. I mean, Jason Hayward's a good person. Ian Happ's a good guy. But those are not superstars.
Right.
They're not superstars. They're good players, but they're not superstars. I build
not indispensable.
I add, if I'm them, another superstar to my team. I can market him. I'm telling you, that cat's gonna. The odds of that cat making you more money than he cost are better than 50-50.
I don't. I do. I find myself on an intellectual level like agreeing with you, but it is this weird thing where I just grit my teeth at. you look at most of these teams that sign guys to 10-year deals, and even though he's going to be in the younger part, these deals just for whatever reason
it's a chance it cripples you.
Huge, huge impacts.
Last point on it. Rizzo's about to turn 30, or just turned 30.
By the way, I think he might handle it a little better than when I did turning 30.
Yeah, he's got little things going for him. Mm-hmm. Baez is in his mid-20s. Bryant's in his mid-20s. Contreras is in his mid-20s. You have this window. I think Harper gives you, assuming that you can make some deals and add some pitching, Harper gives you a better chance of capitalizing on that window. And then at the end of that 5-6-year window, if you suck for 2 or 3 years, everyone's proven that's the way to rebuild. So you can afford to do that at that point. If they look back on this, God, Tiger's all over the place right now.
He's hitting it close. He's giving himself chances, but he still has not hit a fairway.
And he's the pitcher that's getting in trouble at every inning and kind of working his way out.
There's no such thing as a clean inning right now.
No, he's walking the leadoff man, giving up a hit.
Yes.
And then he's grinding to a strikeout.
Everyone watching the game has sweaty palms because nothing has been clean thus far.
He comes into the dugout and everybody's just like, oh my God, I don't know how he got out of that.
Yeah.
But last thing on Harper.
It's a Carlos Martinez inning.
Martinez inning, where he's brilliant, but he can't get there. I'll say it's kind of, as we finish it up, Bryce Harper to the Cubs is really good for baseball. And I know I say that as a Cubs fan, but Bryce Harper to the Cubs is such a big story that it's good for baseball. Because the Cubs aren't winning the World Series this year. It's going to be the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Astros, one of those three teams.
But baseball's the weirdest. Like, it is a great playoffs. I love the baseball playoffs, but we've seen teams that are not the best team end up winning the World Series.
Sure. Well, the Cardinals did it several years ago. They won 83 games.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's hard. I think if right now you offered most people, hey, you can have the two top American League teams or the field, right now you would take the two top American League teams.
Yes, but at the same time, I didn't think Boston was going to get bounced in the first round last year. I mean, I thought Boston last year was a really freaking good baseball
team.
Well,
they were. Yeah, they ran into pitching. Yeah. Anyway.
So, like, I do understand your point about it would be good for baseball because it typically, when you have superstars in big markets, it helps baseball. But I just think baseball is in this weird, it's in this weird pigeonhole, which is not a bad thing because that's still one of my favorite aspects. Like, this is still the number two revenue producer worldwide. It's still Major League Baseball.
Oh, yeah, because it does so well regionally.
But it is such a regional sport that I think it's hit this point of no return. I think it is what it is now, which is it is a business model that is dependent on a very loyal regional fan base. And I don't think it can change.
That's why if I'm Boris, and I know Boris is tight with the Nationals, if I'm Boris, I'm putting him on a team that has a national following, not a regional following, a national following. Because he's great looking, he's charismatic, all that stuff. If I'm Scott Boris, that cat's a Yankee, a Red Sox, a Dodger, a Cub. That's about it. He's not going to Philly. He's not going to Atlanta. He's not doing anything. He's going to a national brand where I can brand him and maybe build him into someone that supersedes the sport.
Well, and the other flip side of it, usually those are the teams that are willing to spend more.
Well, they'll spend. He's going to get his money. Because Philly's going to offer him whatever he wants.
It will be fascinating, though, because teams, the last 2 years, we've seen teams not really willing to work with Boris. Now, I think there was an overcorrection. I think teams started to wise up and the market corrected. Right. There were some really bad contracts out there.
That's why the Cubs will work with Boris because they want to be able to keep Chris Bryant in a few years. They'll work with Boris. The Cubs will overpay for Bryant, my opinion.
Well, I think whoever gets Bryant is going to overpay because I just think you're at that point where when someone gets his big deal, I think it's almost impossible to live up to what you signed for.
Yeah.
There's no way, I don't think there's any way you can be worth what they give you.
No, but If he's a guy that, let's say he signed a 10-year deal, and in 10 years they won two titles and he won two MVPs, it was worth it. Yeah.
I mean, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I agree on that.
All right, as we finish Tigers, let's see. This
putt has to go in. This is for birdie
on
9.
This is for birdie, and it is
Drano.
He's getting hot. Did his little
fist pump.
Yeah,
he got the crowd fired up. Like, and that is the other thing, man, when Tiger's out there, the roars are different.
Oh, it's different. Everyone's cheering. Everyone's cheering
for
him.
There's electricity. They have made golf fun. He makes golf fun. Like, he makes golf cool.
He is 11 under. He's through.
He's one behind Brooks Koepka as he goes to the 10th hole.
Going to the 10th. He's halfway through his round. He's a shot back. Yeah, he and Justin Thomas tied a shot back of Brooks Koepka with his Stanford book in his back pocket. Great story. Appreciate you doing this today.
Happy to do it.
We're going to get you back on in about 2 weeks. We're going to do a big college and NFL football preview. We'll get your picks and stuff, so be thinking about that.
Hell, we're close to Neil's picks, aren't we?
Yeah, 2 weeks away. Start on August the 30th.
Wow.
I know. It's here.
August really is the Sunday of months.
Yeah. It's a long month. This time, though, it's flown by. Maybe it's because I don't know. It's weird. August is a weird month. But so far it's gone quickly. So, anyway, for Jeffrey, I'm Neil. Thanks so much. We'll be back sometime, maybe even later this week, with another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Until then, take care.